Hello, and welcome back to another episode of ABA Mom. I'm your host, Allie, a board-certified behavior analyst and mom of five. Today, we have a very special guest with us, Nancy Moses Bennett. Nancy is the author of Building Vocabulary While Playing and has been a speech therapist with over 40 years of experience. Nancy, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Allie.
Yeah, of course. So with your 40 years of experience as a speech-language pathologist, can you just tell listeners a little bit about your journey and what inspired you to go into the field of speech therapy?
Yeah, I would love to. It's actually a little interesting because I decided in ninth grade to go to the public library. I was in high school and figure out what do I want to be when I grow up. And I looked at a book and they talked about teachers, nurses, doctors, a whole bunch of all the traditional things. And in there was speech therapist. And it really piqued my curiosity. And I said, you know, I think I want to be a speech therapist. And my mom was working at St. John's University. So I had free tuition for undergraduate and they had a program, the pre-program before your master's in speech pathology. So I took all the courses, went all the way through high school, planning with my guidance counselor. And I went through the program. And at St. John's, I met a wonderful professor who had gotten her PhD at NYU. So I was living in New York at this time. And I decided I would go to NYU for my master's and they accepted me. Right after my grad school, I went straight on for the master's. So I don't know many people who decide in ninth grade, you know, especially in this day and age. Maybe it was better back then, but it just seemed I was definitely going to go to college. And it really did impress me what a speech therapist does.
Wow, that's amazing. Because I know, like, thinking back in high school or, you know, what kind of career choices out there, it's like, you know, there's a teacher, there's a doctor. I've never even thought about a speech pathologist. I'll tell you what, I never saw a behavior analyst in the books.
No.
And I've never seen a speech pathologist.
I don't think
that's
I
amazing.
Ever saw anything about behavior in that book either. And this is a long time ago. I mean, I graduated high school in 76, you know, and so at 72, 73, I was ninth grade. And it was speech therapist. It wasn't speech language and pathologist.
Yeah. No, that's amazing.
You're going to need a master's. I knew you would need a master's. And so I thought, okay, so you've got to get a master's. And I was pretty fortunate. You know, I had enough support. I could stay at home, commute. I worked, you know, after school, worked on weekends, and went back and forth commuting for 6 years. And I went straight through. You know, I didn't take a break or a pause. And that was kind of unusual.
Wow.
I knew a lot of people who graduated that didn't go straight through back then. And, you know, that's not unusual. It does happen.
Yeah.
But it felt good to just get it all done.
No, that's amazing. That's incredible. I think it's probably the best way to just go ahead and get it straight through if you can. But that's amazing.
Yeah.
With your over 40 years experience, what are some major or biggest changes that you've seen in speech and language interventions since you began working in schools?
And that is really a very good question. When I started in New York City Public Schools. That was my first job as a speech language pathologist. Had a great mentor. She was amazing. Another therapist working at the same school as me. And it was really nice. Back then, we did everything by hand. You wrote out your reports. We didn't have laptops and we weren't expected to go get a typewriter and write. So you hand wrote your goals. You hand wrote your reports and you make mimeograph copies, you know, so if you needed to copy something for therapy, you're copying pages on a mimeograph and you had to physically move it. There was no push a button and it comes out. So really the technology is the big thing that has changed everything. And I remember when I got my first laptop, I moved to Florida in the 80, whatever it was, maybe 85 or so. And I remember working as a contractor, so I did a lot of nursing homework. And then I contracted a little bit with the school district, just myself. So I would help at an agency here, outpatient there, nursing home here and there. So I did a lot of elderly. But I always wanted to kind of get back into the full thing of school. So I contracted 1 day a week, no, 2 days a week with the public schools. And I was centered to a VPK program in Bunnell. And they just had one pre-K classroom with ESC students, so special needs class. And there were only like 8 or 9 kids in it. And now they're up to like 11 or 12 special needs classes at Bunnell. So I was the first speech therapist. They didn't have room for me in any of the other buildings, said, this is where we need you. So I started with pre-K when I ended up in Florida after doing nursing homes for a little bit. I just decided I want to get back to kids. So I went and contracted 2 days a week. And the rest of the week, I was going here and there, different facilities. And then eventually, I decided to come on full time. And that was in my 40s. And so here, they hand you a laptop now. We're not writing it anymore. Here's your laptop. And I'm thinking, a laptop? What? I mean, I had a computer at home, you know, they've been cranking on, you know, but I didn't anticipate. that in my 40s, I would be having to make this big switch in technology. You know, there was no technology. Yeah. Now, my son, who's 35, had he had a computer in his classroom in kindergarten. So they were starting to teach kids about computers back when I started working for the district. But it, you know, now we have to write a report. So you have to learn all those systems. And it really, it was complicated. A lot of teachers just quit at that point. And I was thinking, you're 40 something years old. Come on. I guess you got to figure this out, you know, and it was worth it. Yeah. I'm really glad I did. I think that that's the hardest thing is teaching old people about computers and how to do it. But I think I got in just in the nick of time where my brain power was still there to focus. And I really needed to do it. And so I just jumped in and I said, okay, you're going to learn how to do this by computer. And so, you know, 20 some odd years later, I retired and I was thinking back to when we were just handwriting. So that's a big evolution, you know, in what we used to do.
Yeah.
The therapy materials, you know, have changed from just those Rexograph sheets of paper. I mean, you have manipulatives, you have all kinds of other things. And the iPads are very big right now. Are they using them for communication, using them for learning? So it becomes this, how attached kids get to iPads. That's the one difficult thing is that, you know, we used to just sit and chat with the children and read a book. And, you know, there was a lot more interaction. And a lot of times now kids are so obsessed, and it really is an obsession with those iPads for some students. And I understand when parents make that choice. I totally get having one. And if your child has very limited communication, that is a nice stepping stone. And sometimes it is going to be with them for many years. And you can, you know, change the programs and things, take out things. I took a continuing ed course, as we all have to do every year. Finish. If you want to keep your credentials, you got to keep going with your continuing ed. And I thought, let me take one about iPads and usage. And I found that, you know, the kids that make the best gains with their language, I'm talking about language and communication, is when the parent is sitting with them. Oh, did you see that? The orange ball popped. Oh, where is he running to? Wow, look how big, you know, commenting on what you're seeing, because kids are just bing, 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 going through it and not so much thinking, but they can manipulate those things, find the games they want. So my advice to parents with the iPads is to sit with them occasionally. Can't do it 100%. I totally understand that. But if you find the time, sit with them and comment on what you see. He looks angry. Oh, he looks happy. Oh, look at that. What will he do next? What do you think? You know, just commenting. And if your child is nonverbal, you just say things, big ball. Wow. All gone. Here he is.
Yeah.
Simple comments. If your child can handle the sentences, you will be more elaborate. So you go from simple to more complex.
I love that. And it just sounds like the interactions change, like versus sitting with a book. Now it's like, okay, like if they're on the iPad, like ways to interact on the iPad. So I like that concept.
They don't need
too.
Somebody sitting with them with the iPad. Now, they don't really always need somebody with a book either, but the books lend themselves a little bit more because the children are not usually reading all the pages. So somebody's sitting there reading and talking. And it's the same thing when you're looking at a book, comment on what you see. What do you think will happen next before you turn the page and see if they can make some appropriate predictions and guesses? Or if it's just find the apple and helping them find the apple on the page. Eat an apple. I eat an apple. Do you like apples? I like apples. Just comment about an apple. Can we find more fruit on the page? Find something else to eat.
Yeah.
So you go into categories.
No, I love that. And I think it like you said, it really just depends on their functioning level, depending on how elaborate it is. So, but I love that. I love that you can do the same thing. Like if you have a book, of course, like a book, like you're there's more of a need to have someone there, right? The iPads, yeah. They can do independently, but there's still questions to be asked. There's still things that they're looking for.
Exactly. Talking about turning it on, turning it off, using all those directional words, using all of those command words, you know, so they start to understand the concepts. Before we do this, we'll do that, you know? There's so much vocabulary if you really look for it. It's there.
Yeah, it's everywhere. I love that. So now that you've recently retired from Flagler County Schools, what reflections or lessons stand out to you the most from your career?
I have to say the best moments are the ones when you make that really great connection. Obviously, the students, you know, and it's so wonderful when you watch them grow. But the times that I was able to really connect with a parent have been the most memorable. And parents that reach out to me now on Facebook and still remember something or send me a picture of their children and, you know, I have a very happy memory of somebody that I'm still connected with. And the parent sent a picture of the Panda Bear book. And I do that with my kids in therapy. And she said, I have no idea why you wanted this book at the media center or the library that they were at. And they checked it out. And then she said, where did you learn about this? Well, Miss Wes's Bennett read it to us. And he went through the book with her. And she gave him Go Fish cards for Christmas. And she's like, how did you learn to play Go Fish? Well, yeah, you play that in speech therapy at school. Those moments. And then when you say to the mom, come in, I would always say to my moms at any of the IEP meetings, please, if you want to make an appointment, email me and I can set something up at 4 o'clock. You go pick up George at the front desk and walk back, sign in as a visitor. You're coming to see me. So you have to sign back in with your child. And then look at what George can do. We did this and this today. Here's a folder of some more things you can do with George at home. And sometimes parents are not aware of how much they can do with the therapist. And they're just blown away. Like this young man with the book from the library and playing Go Fish. He was ready to play, even though she hadn't taught him how to play. She had given it to him for Christmas. And I love the idea of games because that's how you capture kids. Toys, games, yep. And they're toys and at all levels. Play, yep.
So speaking of play, your book, Building Vocabulary While Playing, focuses on making speech development fun, which I love. What inspired you to write this?
I think I've been a big fan of Canva for years. I've been creating materials to send home with kids, printing them in color where it really makes difference. You know, I prefer printing in color, sending it for a parent, showing them at IEP meetings. And then I said, I have all these ideas. Why don't you just put it together and see if you could publish something? And I started putting my ideas together. And then, you know, Amazon does this really quick way to publish. So I went through Amazon. It's not like hiring a professional editor. You're really doing a lot of this stuff yourself. You're just sending it back and forth. And I'm sure there are other companies doing it, but obviously that's the easiest way to do something sometimes. And so I just, you know, looked at the whole deal and I thought, well, let me just go ahead and send these things back and forth. It took almost a year from the time I started with them to the time that it got published, but I'm working full time and I had a part-time private practice. So I wasn't just devoting a full year to this book. You know, I was doing it in between all of my other things. So it did take a year. But it was a really great journey because I was picking and choosing what I wanted to include in the book. And that's a hard thing when you've been working so many years and printing things for so many years. So what do you include and what do you exclude? So that was the biggest challenge.
It's probably hard to choose.
It is.
So how does your approach of using play differ from traditional speech therapy models?
I think I use actual real toys, you know, toys. And they will ask for the dinosaur puzzle, you know, in the box. They will ask for the cool Pirate Pete book. You know, originally we were just using the regular things you have in a school or in a classroom. You know, you have a set amount of books and workbooks and pictures. So I just decided that I was going to go with, you know, two toys. Things that build up are really good because they have to keep asking for more. You know, if you want the next one and they have to say something for it. And I have picture supports that I use. So this is an actual picture of a toy I have. This is the actual book I have. These are the actual puzzles. So then when you get down here, they have to tell me what they want. Now, this is a busy board. I wouldn't have all these things on there. I would have a couple of choices of a toy. And if the child really likes the Pirate Chief book, they have to move this down to the I want. And then they have to tell me. And they start talking. So it's not like they remain nonverbal with this. And I hold their finger hand over hand. Well, it looks like you want the Pirate Chief book. And they say it. But you have to use your words. Tell me what you want. And then they get to do the Pirate Chief book. So I have pictures of everything. And parents can do this. It's kind of simple to do. Just cut it out of a magazine, put it on a piece of cardstock and laminate it, you know. And then it makes it, if the children are not using words for the toys, you can put highly motivational toys and activities in front of them and they choose. And then I like to, for them to put an extra word in there. So if we're doing the puzzles, I'll keep all the pieces out of that puzzle. You don't just get everything.
That's great. So they have to ask for it.
Oh, you want that 90-some puzzle to you? Well, here we go. What do you need? You want your red one? Which dinosaur do you want? And then they have to say, I want, and choose their color card. So I want, and then they would put the puzzle there, but the puzzle would, I know they blue because Joe's blue. So then I would do the blue pieces and they would get those and build each puzzle. So it's a set of like three puzzles. And I love categories. So there's a dinosaur puzzle, there's pets, there's vehicles, and that's it. Three different kinds of puzzles. So I really love. And then we think about other things that belong in those categories. So I like using real toys because they are very motivational. And this hexagon game is great. So it's the same thing. If you really want to build it up, you have to ask me for the colors that you want. And unless you say, I want blue, I want purple, you're not getting it. Now, they learn to say it. So they get to play, even if they're not, that we're not allowing them. But they're pointing to what they want. So this helps. You could do hand over hand, out of want, and you put the picture there, or you know they really like red. So you'll encourage them to just point. You want red. Can you point with me? And I'll do hand over hand. And I'll say, I want red. And then what I'll do is I'll hold up something that's blue. And then we have to do the yes, no. Was this red? And yes, no is so good once they start learning the connection. So I hide the incorrect answer. So if I'm holding up something that's blue and I say, is this red? And I point, no. Is this red? Yes. So I hide the incorrect one. And then eventually they start distinguishing between yes and no. Yes and no is very tricky because if you say, how do you like chocolate? I could say yes. I could say no. Either one could be correct. You know, you don't know what I like. So trying to get concrete responses to, is this a yes or no? Is this a yes or no? Having them learn. And now, you know, is this a pen only has one correct answer. It's always going to be yes. Is this a cup? Only has one right answer. And the answer in that case is no. So you go back and forth, hiding and allowing them then to have both of them and see how long it takes for them to get maybe 5 or 10 in a row. Then you know, wow, they're getting that. Maybe I'll do 10 no's in a row. Then I'll do 10 yeses in a row. So they really start to get that concept. This is key to helping families also communicate, you know, when they really do understand. If, does your stomach hurt? You know, I don't know. But if they start to get the concrete, then we move into the more abstract and the ones that are less definitive, the ones that are more emotional or in my mind, I know what it is. And you don't know what that is. But once they start this, it's really a one piece and connection for them. And you're doing it with all these fun things that they definitely want. The other thing I do is for parents, I recommend, you know, this is a juice box. So cut a piece out of whatever it is they like to eat at home, you know, Doritos, juice box. I have a variety of just food pieces. And then you do the same thing. Okay. Sometimes parents will say, oh, he knows what he wants. He goes to the refrigerator, gets his juice and out. That's good because we want children to be independent in gaining what they want. But we want to start that communication. So we need it to be out of their reach or out of the refrigerator, out of their sight. And you have to present the pictures of what they want. And then they get to choose their snack that way. And then eventually, you know, you're tapping them out. It's not that they have to say all the words, but you point as you say the words and they start to learn to put simple sentences together. And it really does evolve. So there's nothing punitive. If the answer is right, the answer is wrong. Yes, no, there's no, you're wrong. Stop. No, wrong. Wrong again. Now, we are continuing to positively reinforce. That was such a good try. You used your words. I love it. And I have a first then kind of a situation. And they have these little smiles that are not in front of me. So I might put this over here, but you first have to get the 5 smiles. You could take 10 minutes to get 5 smiles, you know, or 1 minute. Sometimes I make it go really fast so that they get the reward quickly. So I like first then, you know, because you can time it however you want. A timer is good. And I've seen a lot of people put the timer, but you have to make sure you're making the wait for the 2 minutes, you know, before you give them something else. So I like this as one of those interim type of a thing where you can do it all in 1 minute and you get the toy. And then you try to space it out, space it out, space it out. So first you put whatever work you want it done here. So once I look at our color chart or whatever it might be, we're going to read a book. So you put a picture. All right. Here's the book. First the book, then we can do the hexagon game.
I love that.
Yeah. So you can put 5 smiles here. So you have to get 5 smiles, whatever the activity is. Or you could put an actual toy there that they're working for. You would put what you want to complete with them here. I take that back. And over here is the prize. So they may not be really wanting that particular book, but you want to make sure that he develops a skill that you had in that book. So we're going to do this book first, and then you get the hexagons. So you can do the book in 1 minute, boom, 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 or, you know, stretch it out if they have the attention span. So this helps them learn to increase their attention span. And that's what I really love about First Sense. And using the picture choice because it's exactly what they want. So you could take a picture of something and print it. But every food they eat, there's a picture in a magazine. You know, there are ads on the screen. Find what it is they like. When you buy that product, cut it out of the box. You don't have to even photocopy anything. This is the actual carton, you know. And I just put packing tape over it. Sometimes works for laminating.
It's a good idea for the carton to actually just cut it out of the box. That's perfect.
It really is. And there are so many packages. You know, the Welch's little fruit snacks, they start to recognize what that is. And especially if you give it to them right away, they know the wrappers. They know the wrappers. And I find that, you know, they have all kinds of picture supports. And sometimes it can get very clumsy and there's too many of them. I'm talking about like when you buy those big commercial things, sometimes there's too many irrelevant ones.
Right.
That we're not going to really use. So I love when, you know, I can help parents start just their own little library of pictures. And then it's just on a piece of cardstock with Velcro. You know, when you put the soft here and on the other side goes the rough. And I always remember this, but a very dear friend of mine said that home is a soft place to land. So this is the home spot and it's the soft. Because if you start putting rough here and soft and rough, then you have that you can't 100% guarantee that it's going to stick. He goes, oh, I was putting the rough on that day and this one has rough. It's not going to work. So the soft needs to be on whatever base that you have. And then the rough goes here. And you can buy these as circles. You know, they have them. So you don't have to buy a whole roll of, they have them already cut into those circles to use. And I mean, if you end up with the roll, you can cut the little squares and use them too. So I get a lot instead of this. Yeah. A lot of variations. Yeah.
We have some very similar tools in that way. So, and I really liked what you were saying back to that yes and no about having it, because some of that stuff is like, we can't see it. Like, we don't know if you have a stomach ache. We don't know if you have a headache. Like, we can assume you do. We don't know if you do. So
did you
I like
breakfast?
How you said, like,
did you eat your breakfast?
Yes or no? We can see, well, unless we see it, right? We don't know.
Exactly.
So I like you say that. Yeah. Yeah. So there's,
and that's a way to teach yes, no. Eventually we want them to be able to say, yes, I have a headache. Yes, I'm hungry. Yes, I feel sick. You know, you want them to be able to describe all those, but start with concrete first.
Right. Right. I think that's very important too. Yeah. And then you and I, so we do that very similarly, teaching yes and no. So like, here's like a concrete thing. Like, this is definitely like, I know that this is a pen. Yes. Or this is not a pen. No. Like, I know for a fact that this is no. So I think that that is very interesting. And a lot of the visuals too, we use in applied behavior analysis as well. We use a lot of those visuals because we want them to request for things. Like, instead of like, it's great, like you said, like being able to go to the fridge, they can point out, they can show whatever it is that they want. That's a part of communication, being able to show you, being able to, kind of pull your hand through things, be able to get what they want. But I think more importantly, like being able to ask for things, being able to say what it is they want, being able to communicate. So I love that you're doing that. And I never thought about cutting out like boxes and wrappers, but that's such a great idea versus going and having all these pictures printed. So that's such a great, easy way to do that.
Yes.
So what, because you gave some really great examples on some ways that parents and caregivers can use functional communication at home. But what are some like games that you might recommend?
Well, I love puzzles. This is an example of a very small table puzzle. All right. You obviously have floor puzzles. They can be, as parents, we've gone crazy trying to help our kids put together the puzzle they just dumped on the floor. And you're trying to cook dinner or you're trying to get out the door and it's too much. So you can do this with your floor puzzles also. First, you got to find somebody to put it together. You can't get around that. So you put it together initially when you get it. And on the back, 1A, this one is 1B. Because they're both in the first row of the puzzle. So you could have 1A, 1B, all the way to F and G, because those big puzzles from the floor. So then you put it together and you put on the back A, 1B, and you put the whole row one together in a rubber band. Goes back in the box. Row two, A, 2B, 2C, 2D. So we have A, 1, 2A, A, and so on. So that when this gets mixed up, and you have 40 and 50 puzzles, pieces, you can have somebody easily put it back together. Just put all the twos in a pile, put all the ones in a pile, put all the threes, and so on. And the bigger puzzles is still going to be a little bit annoying, but it's a lot less annoying to put that back together and have it ready to play. I do know parents really reluctantly engage in puzzles. I think I invented this, by the way. It just dawned on me one day when I'm stuck in a therapy session with, there's got to be a way, because you got your next group coming. The next group can help you sort them. If it's like this, it's much easier. It goes back in the box. The kids, as they leave, they can sort the puzzle they just created, put it back in the box. And that's a learning thing too. And it's grouped, right? Hey, George, you do group one. You do first row. Mary, you're going to do the second row. And Susie, you'll do the third row. So you give them all of those pieces, or you give them the two pieces you know go together. So if the kids are really struggling, you know this one goes with this one, right? So you can set it up so that they really know how to link it. And then there's vocabulary, slide, slide. Oh, you got to turn it, the vocabulary of puzzle building, slide, turn, oh, and press down. And then you use those words over and over. If I know these two go together, those are the two I will give. And usually I would give them the same row. So it's going across. So 2A
and 2B. That's such a great idea.
Yeah, 2A and 2B.
That makes it so much easier.
It does. If the kid is not now looking at
so much time.
You know, it will drive a parent mad. You can imagine what it does with our children with low verbal ability, you know, and those motor skills that are not always there and they're not reading very well, you know. But if I know these two go together and I can help you figure out how they go together, now can you put these two together?
Right.
I can do it. Two way and two, this one goes this way. So now if you put them right like that, that's the simplest thing. Can they do it? Now, can they do it if I turn them and put them in front on the table? If I turn them, now they're learning how to turn and slide, turn and slide. It's cognitive. And that's what I love about puzzles. You don't have to have the language. I add the language of turning and sliding, but the child doesn't have to say, oh, I have to put this one first because this one is the tail or the nose or the, there's no real language. It's just thinking. And if you can train kids to think, fill in the blank, you know, a lot of other things come from that ability to figure things out and think. It's cognitive. So we always want to build the cognitive with the language and with the communication.
That makes a lot of sense. So I like how you explained that too, because as you were going through that, I'm like, I'm not sure that that's, you know, communication, but that's true. Like once you have that cognitive ability, like you can problem solve, like what else can you do, you know, with your brain?
And puzzles are problem solving. You could set it up so there's one piece missing. And can they find that piece and figure out how it fits in the puzzle? You know, so you can go from everything from this is a 6-piece puzzle, very simple, to the 48 pieces on the floor with a small group of children. I do that. And you do a lot of hands over hand until they figure it out. And then you have them try to interact with each other. Oh, she's got the next piece. Mary, give that to George. I think that goes on his side, you know, and next one you can put on Mary. So taking turns, a big thing. We communicate taking turns. You know, there's so much that is dependent on turn taking.
No, that's great. And it's very social too, which I love.
Yes.
So in regards to your book, because one thing I really love about your book is that it includes a lot of games that can be done with siblings, can be done with caregivers, and some of them, you know, really simple things that you just kind of like, oh, that's such a great idea.
Okay. I would like to add on to the game thing for you, because
A
game that I used to play as a child, that's how old it is, okay? I used to play Memory Match, and it came with probably 112 pictures, you know. Or let's say 120 and you have 60 and they match. So that game is still very popular today. Memory match games are out there. Now we used to turn 100 cards over and we take turns turning 2 over at a time, turn them back. Your turn, turn 2 more over, try to, and it takes a half an hour, 40 minutes, an hour to finish that, depending on how many kids you have and the age levels. I like memory match because you can do the same thing with turning 10 over at one time and leave them out. So you may have a fifth grader helping the less verbal 2-year-old or 3-year-old or 5-year-old, depending on ability level, leave them all face up. And can the one with the limited ability or the younger one pick up the ones that look the same? Because that's a skill. Can you recognize two things that are the same? You can do it and then leave them up and keep going until you find all the pairs. You know, so it doesn't have to be turn 2 up, turn 2 down, turn 2 up. That will take forever. And it makes an adult it already too. It is. We do want our kids learning how to turn 2 and have the patience for that, attention span for that. Okay. But if they're young, you have an old sibling, a younger sibling, they can really play and it's much more fun doing 2 at a time. So I believe in simplifying. You could checkers with 2 checkers. You don't have to have 12, you know, going around the board at the same time. So whatever you're doing and treble, you know, you don't have to do all the colors. You could do 2 at a time and have them go around and around. So simplify. It doesn't have to be everything exactly the way you said it, you know, was going to be, or the way the instructions are reading. You just modify, simplify, and change the rules for the children who are not able. And it's more fun. And the older kids, and even if you have a language delayed child, and a child that's on the normal learning curve for language, the older child learns how to be compassionate and adjust a game so that his brother can play or his sister can play. You know, there's something that is so strong in that. And we see it even in the classmates, because some of the kids that are in therapy together are very high functioning. They're kind of on their own with their language. It's maybe just coming in for speech production, you know, pronunciation. or they may be just a little bit delayed with their language. And then some kids are nonverbal, and I will purposely try to pull some of those kids in so they get used to being with each other and learn that compassion. No, you know, George is very upset. We're going to let him sit and he'll be okay. George, take a few breaths. He's crying. But I still have, you know, Sally over here is ready to go. We have to be patient. He's upset. And we keep going. Yeah. And then George realizes nobody's looking at me, so I'm going to walk over to the group. But maybe I do want to play that puzzle. So we keep going as much as we can, even with the distraction. But it teaches that compassion that we need so desperately right now in this world. You know, the way things are right now, we do need to be able to look and say, looks like you need a hand with something. Looks like you need help, you know, and be okay that he wins because you gave him the upper hand. And then I reflect on that with them. Didn't that feel good helping George? Now he's ready to come to the table. We used to have a child, Jaden, and he was very, very, didn't want to come. He screamed and carried on second grade. And he's verbal, you know, but we waited him out, you know, and then we went on with our thing. Every now and then, want to come and join us, Jaden. And it does work. And then the other kids start to get empathetic and sympathetic. I'll help you, Jaden. Yes. Come sit next to me, Jaden. It's okay, Jaden. Don't cry. Oh my gosh, it's so beautiful to see that.
It is. It is. I love seeing that in classrooms too, and with siblings, just caring for one another. It's just like knowing that there's something different, or they're having a more difficult time. So like, yeah, see that compassion is so, it's so heartwarming to see that. I love it.
It's so crazy because it used to be so separate. You know, we kept these kids separate when they finally came to school. And now we're starting to think, both people, both children, both families benefit, you know, and seeing the parent realize, oh my gosh, he has a friend. Now Mary Life's helping him and they're doing fine and he has a friend.
I love that. I love that on both ends, that they have a friend, but they also are helping somebody else. That's just a little different from them. So I love that too. So I think that's a great game. I love that it can be simplified, whatever level that they're at. All like your games, I think just looking at your book, like all your games in your book, they can all be simplified. So whatever it is, like if they're not, you know, on this level and they don't have all the rules of the game, like it can just be reduced. Like what can they do? And taking from some of those, whatever skill set that they have and those prerequisite skills and building off of it. And I think that is
too. Maybe George and Mary are a partner. And they realize what the next move should be. Or Mary will help George figure out what the next move will be. And that's fine. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's great.
It works.
I love it.
And then everybody feels like they're doing something. And everybody gets the praise. Yes. Great.
Everyone gets to participate. Yeah. Right. Everyone gets to be a part of it.
Right. There's enough things you can really compete with out there. You know, there's all those compositions that you can write, spelling bees, all kinds of things for the children who really naturally come to language and can figure things out. There's a lot of things they can do for the prize, the real prize. And it's a good experience to recognize.
Right. Because really what you're doing is really boosting up confidence, right? Mm-hmm. So you're kind of like, oh, like I can do this. And then like, you know, what's the next building block? Like what's the next thing that we can do to get there?
Exactly.
So I think it's great. And it's just everyone gets like we said, everyone gets to participate, which is wonderful. Mm-hmm. So what do you feel like that your book that you hope that parents professionals take away?
Well, I'll hold it up at this point. This is what it looks like. Okay. Pictures on the front. Yes. And then the beginning part is a lot of just instruction, you know? So there's a lot of words. What I want you to understand is why we build vocabulary, because vocabulary is a precursor to reading comprehension. So if you have a child that understands, let's go through the Panda Bear book. Panda Bear, what do you see? I see a blobbity blob doing whatever. There's a part in that book where I see a water buffalo charging at me. So I don't turn the page to the panda bear. What do you think the animal is doing if he's charging? So you find those words that may be multiple meaning. And it's a good time to teach it in context of a story like that. And the kids only think about charging their cell phone, charging their video games, charging their, you know, batteries. They don't think about charging. And once in a while, a kid will think about charging a purchase. There's so many things, you know, and then they don't know running at. It's a little known word or a little used word in that way. We don't talk about animals charging a lot. So then we find out it's a buffalo and the water buffalo. If they're charging, they're running at you. So take time to find those multiple meaning words in a book and talk about them. The word run has about 10 different meanings. Water runs, principal runs the school. You can run for elections. You can run with your legs. You know, there's a ton of things. The car runs, your refrigerator is running or not running. You know, multiple meaning words is a very good way to build vocabulary. If you, if a child understands three or four or five different definitions for one word, when they're going to reading comprehension, where there's no picture, they can make the connection better if they see he was running for office. Is he running to his office? Running for office? There's no picture. So now you're holding comprehension back if they don't have a broad range of definitions. So in a simple book, you start talking about those other things they can mean. So by the time they get to those third and fourth grade reading passages in fifth grade, they have an understanding. You know, the word saw, it's a verb, past tense of see, but it's also a tool.
Yeah.
And it's also an action. I saw with a saw. I saw my saw on the bench and started sawing with my saw. I mean, and that gets confusing for kids if you don't have that ability to, oh, it means something different. So I love teaching multiple meaning words. So teaching those vocabulary words will lead to better reading. And that the studies do show. So if your vocabulary at age three, you're reading better in third grade when they start with the standardized testing, and comprehension really comes into play. Okay. Those are the main things. So then it talks about playing games and puzzles, exactly what I was telling you about. So it's a lot of words. Oh, build a book. I like that. You can take all your cool stickers and you can put together a book. Sorry, now. So you would take the stickers, put the cow next to the bird, put the bird above the cow, put the horse behind the sheep. You know, find animal stickers, find stickers that are, what will we call them? Like categorized. Okay, I found my book. That are categorized. So here are a bunch of vehicles. So then you practice, you put a book together. This is a photo album. 4x4 cards, cardstock, and put animals on. And these are all vehicles, I'm sorry. So then you would talk about the different vehicles. The bus is a vehicle that takes kids to school, but it takes them home also. Not just taking them to school, takes them home. There are work trucks, you know. Find a video of what it looks like. YouTube Kids has got great videos. You know, these are all cartoonish, but let's find out what it really looks like working. And there are wonderful vehicle videos online. I love doing that. And if I tell you about a thingamajig and you don't know what a thingamajig is, and I show you in a video what it does, like the definition is much clearer and it's going to be in there better. You're going to get a better concept. So can you think of any more vehicles? We have these vehicles here. Tell me three more flying vehicles. Find some water vehicles. And so, yeah, there's all kinds of vehicles that fly. And don't forget the hot air balloons, you know, and it broadens up. Yeah, that's right. That's also a vehicle. So I like using stickers. Stickers are very often themed, you know. All right, where is it? It's on the roof. The barn is a building on the farm. Categories. The rooster is a chicken and it's the dad. The hen is the mom, you know. They're all alike. They're animals. They're all farm animals, but they're different animals. These two are very alike. They're both mammals. If a kid knows it's a cow, does he know it's a mammal? And you wouldn't do that with a nonverbal child. You would just first, you want them to get to name them and point. So we have receptive language and expressive. So if I say, what's this? That's receptive if they can, expressive if they can say pig. And if I say, find the pig, that's receptive. They have to think. They don't have to say anything. They have to identify. So language builds in two ways, the comprehension and then the expression. And these are fun ways of doing things with kids and recognizing that category would be a building. Name another building, another vehicle. Oh, the pig is in front of the vehicle. It's a farm vehicle. Categories.
Great.
And stickers are fun to play with.
Yeah. The stickers is a great idea to build your own book,
you're
too.
That's awesome. Like this, too. So which monkey's in front of the giraffe? Which one is behind? Stickers. You don't have to draw. You don't have to print it out. You just buy some cool stickers.
Yeah. It's just, that's a great idea. It's a great, simple way to do that.
Very
simple. I love it.
So then it goes into, okay, clear speech directions. If a child is leaving off that final sound, you know, it's not an elephant, it's an elephant. It's not an elephant, it's a three-syllable word. Elephant, pronounce all the syllables, pronounce all the sounds. And this gives you that quick way of describing how they can better sound, better pronounce. And then it has multisyllabic words. So learning is not spire, spider's. And it's stamp, backpack, right? And the words here are pictures around the edges. So kind of fun. It goes up to three and four syllable words, teaching that each word, you know, you have to get all those syllables out to be understood.
Right.
And while looking at pictures, can you find things? So if you have a picture book with your kids, look for things. And then looking for actions, looking for objects in the book, in the pictures that you're looking. And then I have some cute scenes. And then at the very end, you talk about the sentences. So more of the grammar. So you have some category pictures, you know, those are there. And then we have this. You have to fill in the correct pronoun. So up here I have I, me, mine, and my. In every sentence down here, you would use I, I have a wagon. The wagon belongs to me. My wagon is home. The wagon is mine. So you're learning how to use these four words with lots of different options here. So I have all the pronouns represented with different items. So we have a, you have a, he has a, they have a, she has a. And then we talk about is and are. So it's a nice little, we are. So the verb to be can be a state of being, happy, funny, or it could be an action, helping support the action. So we are running, we are eating, we are reading. And you have each square up here to use with each one of these verbs. And then the other way to use it would be, you know, how are you feeling? So he is, she is, we are. Yeah, the am and the is are here and the are is on the other side. So state of being as well as the action. So it's good to encourage kids if they are using sentences to start understanding pronouns. And pronouns can be very tricky. So if a child had minimal vocabulary, I don't worry too much about that. But if they're already, if they're saying him go, him do, me want, you know, you want to start training that as best you can. But good if they're using, you know, those pronouns, the next stage is are they using them correctly?
Yeah. No, I think that's great. I think there's so much, like, you know, when I was looking at your book, there's like so much. And I like how you mention that different words have different meanings. So like when you say like a saw and a saw, like it's very, it's different. And I, there's a lot in there. I think it's, you can tell you put a lot of work into it.
Thank you. A lot of thought and thinking. And what's the right picture? This doesn't show it the way I want it to show. And you have to make choices because otherwise you would never finish it. And I do have an idea for another one about multiple meaning words, just putting, you know, a book together with multiple meaning words.
Yeah. No, that's fantastic. I think it's great. There's so much in there for caregivers. And I like that too, that you can even include siblings in it too. So it's just, it could be for anyone. So anyone that is involved with a child can participate with what you've provided in the book. And I love it. And I love that it's all play.
Yeah.
So it's all fun. Like, it's still fun.
Right.
Right. And it's fun. It's not, yeah, it's not just a workbook.
Right. And Simon says, you know, there's so many ways to develop that vocabulary, you know, and to make it as simple as possible. There's a lot of games.
Yeah. No, it's awesome. It's awesome. I highly recommend it. I already ordered one.
Oh, thank you.
For a client. Yeah, I ordered one for a client because I'm like, you know, they could really benefit for this, both the caregiver and the client, the RBT that's working with them. I'm like, this is a great book. So I highly, highly recommend it. I think it's fantastic for a lot of different, you know, functioning levels. And, you know, I think it's great. And I love that it's play, because that to me is like the most important thing, because when it's aversive and it's boring, then the kids, you know, they're not interested. And I'm not interested either when it's not.
Very true. And especially once you get home, you don't want to keep going with more work, you know?
Exactly.
And that's what it is when parents are trying too hard with the academics. You know, we got to try to make it a little bit more fun. But every situation is different. And you and I have spoken about this. The heart is with the parents, you know, and they're the best judge. And if the parents are feeling like they don't want you to force it, you know, I don't force anything. I back up, I model in front of them. So I do home visits. You know, I work with clients at home sometimes, and it's easier to get the parent involved. But you have to let them lead still, because it's their child, you know, and then you can't be so rigid. And I've seen speech people, behavior people, you know, OTs that are too rigid, and then it makes the parent not want the service, you know, and then what do we do? So you have to be able to communicate with the parent, with the teacher, and just give them the praise they deserve, because until you've walked there, you know, you cannot imagine what it would be like to have a five-year-old that hasn't even said mom yet. It's a whole another world for them.
Yeah.
So I try to put myself in that parent's position, you know, and then I pull them along gently, but I meet them where they are. And if it takes them a real long time, I had one parent, you know, I stopped going to the house because I think she was too upset at watching her child cry to play. You know what I mean? And this should run away. And I was with them for more than a year. And it really, you know, but I think it was because they were not as, come on, sweetie, you can do this. They were too hurt watching her suffer through. Do you know what I mean? And that can be a tricky moment, because some children are much more, let's say, stubborn in a loving way than others. You know, some kids come along and sit right on your lap and they're ready to go. And then others, they'll fight you for 6 months, you know,
the whole time.
And then that's definitely hard. Yeah, exactly. So if that's the case, then I'm fine backing away. But you can't just allow the child to do anything they want. You have to be working to do something. You know, they're paying you to do something. So you try really hard at, you know, moving them along the continuum. And if it's not right for them, and sometimes, you know, that does happen. It's not often that that happens, but every now and then the parent, you know, can't handle the pain that it is. I don't like watching my kid cry either. You know, it's a terrible feeling.
Right.
So, you know, people are at different levels. And I always encourage my teachers, my interns, you know, you have to be okay. The parents, you know, where they need to be. And I find that my way of not overly pushing it to the parent, like, you're really messing this up here. But even with my, as I am the softest approach, you know, to helping a
child.
Which
is a great way to be, because, you know, just
much better.
Because you have, it's because you have this great idea and you're like, this is going to really work. Like, this kid's really receptive to this. Like, it's going to work. You know, the parent may not have those same feelings. And I think it's just very important to just, you know, just like you said, meet them where we are. They are be compassionate, like, understanding, like, hey, like, you know. And then I think too, you know, kind of my approach too for parents is just kind of like, what do you want out of this? Like, what are your goals that you want for your child? Because what you want for your child may not be the things that I'm thinking for goals. So they might be completely different. So I think that's really important too, as providers, to be compassionate and just understanding that, like, you know, we're not them. We don't know everything that they're going through.
No.
And so what we want and what they want can look very different, and that's okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And at a different time, maybe, you know, and there are other pressures that some of our parents have that we may not really be aware of. So other parents were fine with me, you know, really coaxing their child along to sit and cooperate. And they could see that she's catching on and he's really, wow, he is cooperating better now. You got to sprinkle that thing that they really want. Oh, come over here and we can do it, you know, just put two things in. You don't have to do the whole board too. You know, and then you can get up and get up and run. Some kids, they are so locked in. And that's the saddest thing, when you can't reach them with your little goodie bag or with your sweet words, when they're still not with you. And so that's a hard part for a therapist to recognize. And it really does not happen often, because the kids usually do. And the parents wait it out. You know, they wait it out. We waited out. And that's what you really kind of have to do, is like, wait it out. And I'm quick with the rewards. You're quick with the rewards. Quick with the rewards. But it's a challenge for some parents to you know, really be able to buy into that.
And I think that's really important what you said, that you don't know always what somebody is going through too. Like, it may not even be something you're totally aware of too. And I think that's just important to just keep in mind. So what do you find are some common misconceptions about speech development that you would like to just kind of clear up, like, for caregivers? Like, what are some that you find that are, like, common misconceptions?
So what I'll do very quickly is define the difference between speech and language. Speech, in terms of strictly interpreting speech, it's how you pronounce the words. So fee instead of see, that's a speech error. If I know how to, you know, look at something and say I see something, I'm saying I fee. I know the meaning of the word see, but I'm not pronouncing it. And then the other piece of it is the language, the comprehension, the expression, which is what I explained before. Can you follow the direction? Can you name it when I point to it? Can you find it when I name it? So that's the whole thing. So misconceptions with speech. Sometimes parents feel it's something they've really done wrong, or the lack of development. A misconception is that you've done something wrong. And I say to parents, unless you have put this child in a closet, and there are some really seriously abused kids that are in a closet and refuse to talk to them, you can't create this state for the child. You can't. This child is obviously loved, is obviously being well cared for. You are talking to him. Look at the room of toys. Or you know that the child is not being, and it's not to minimize, there are some kids that are neglectful. Neglected. Right. We're talking about those parents that are really so upset because it's something they did, right? So I want parents to understand, you know, even if you're not really talking in the same way every other parent might be talking, you can't really create this unless you have absolutely ignored and neglected and refused to talk. There's something in the wiring of the child that we have to figure that out. And it's not always clear, you know, so parents have to just say, this is what I have right now. And, you know, we're going to start here and we will move this forward. And I've had parents in IEP meetings, and I explained to them, look, this is the learning curve. You know, by the time he turns 8, you want him to be talking here. Right now, he's talking like he's 2. To catch up with his friends, he's got to get 6 years of language in 1 year. That is not likely to happen. And we have to be okay with that. But then look at where she was last year. Mom, do you remember? And she goes, oh my gosh, last year she was just banging her chest and repeating everything I said. And now she's actually asking for things. She's sitting for longer periods. She's playing those simple games. She's naming these silly pictures you gave her, you know, and they can recognize the growth. They all make gains. No, they will grow. But we wish and we want them all to be right on target in 1 year, all cured, right? That's not what we're really truthfully going to achieve, depending on the level of delay and what's causing it. So the speech delay, if that's all they have, they can catch up, you know. But even some of those kids, you know, there are other issues. It's apraxia. What is keeping them from being able to learn how to move their tongue properly? So it's celebrating the growth and recognizing that it's not any one thing that you did, or you yelled at the dad one day and the kid got upset, or you punished the child to sit on his bed until he thought, you know. No, that's not what creates this. And sometimes we don't always know. You could go to a doctor right. and get neuro testing and have everything. And 10 years later, we may not have a clear picture. So you have to kind of like, yeah. all right, this is what we have. But we didn't do it. So I want parents to understand, but you can help it. And you can help it.
I love that too, because I find, you know, a lot of parents, you know, feel guilty. They feel like it's their fault that they did something. Like I had a parent one time say to me, like, you know, I didn't eat very much. I was pregnant. I mostly ate yogurt. Like, did I cause autism? I'm like, no, you didn't cause autism.
No.
I said, but well, you know, and I think that's so hard because it's like, you know, I think a lot of parents feel, and I think, you know, any parent in general too, but especially if you have a child with a disability, you want them to have friends. You want them to be like their peers. You want them to be independent one day. So yeah. I really feel for parents on that, and just, you know, and I think that's really important to know, you know, it's not your fault or something you did, but it's something, you know, like you said, like, look how far they come. Like, well, this is what right. they used to do, but look where they are yeah. now.
So, they are learning, you know, they are learning. Right? And I teach parents how to really enjoy Absolutely. That because they can remember yeah. how tricky it was last year. You wouldn't even wear socks. You wouldn't wear shoes, you know, all of yeah. those pieces, not just right. language was so much. And now, you know, they'll put their shoes on and they put them on themselves. And that's, you know, such a cool thing if you get to experience that with a parent and congratulating them. Yeah, that's, you know, I've guided you, yeah. but, you know, you did it. You did it.
And a small progress is progress, right? Like Absolutely. Even those small accomplishments, Absolutely. Like putting yourself by yourself, that's huge. Like,
Absolutely.
You know, so
Definitely.
I love that. And I love, you know, that's one of the joys of this field. I feel like it's just seeing any, you know, seeing progress, like, you know, like there's kids, it's like, you know, they weren't doing any much independently before, and now they are, and now they're talking, and now yeah. you know, they didn't say mom, and now they are. And so there's just some incredible things. And you know, and I think, you know, for a lot of parents, they realize, like, I think it just like the recognition and just being reminded of that.
Yes.
So I love that you're also reminding them, like, hey, look where we are. So I love that.
Absolutely. And don't get flustered if the child is having a fit. No. I don't get upset. I'm not telling the parent not to. The therapist can't be upset that the child is not cooperating. And we've seen our share of that, or the teacher. Yep. Come on, this is not really about you. I know it feels like it's about you, but it's really not. We got to be patient and get the child through the situation. Yeah, it's crazy. I would like to say one thing. Have you heard the Holland story? You're in Holland. I'm going to just briefly say it, okay? And I try to share this with parents. I try to share it with new therapists also, that you're preparing to go to Paris. You know, you get all the stuff you need for Paris and you land in Holland. Well, you're not ready for Holland. You want to go to Paris. And it is like that for the parent who is dreaming of this child. We all dream of the child we're going to have. And then all of a sudden, and when it's such a different picture than you had, you know, it's not necessarily I wanted a girl and I have a boy, you know, this is, whoa, we didn't really prepare for this. Now I'm in Holland when I have everything for Paris, or you end up in the North Pole and you have nothing for the North Pole. You have to figure out how to exist in the North Pole, like it or not, you know, you are in Holland now, and Holland has got some beautiful things about it. And there are some wonderful things to appreciate with that in that journey, and just being okay. That, all right, we're in Holland, you know, this is what we're going to do. But if you can get it online, you know what I mean? It's a great little story. And then there's the starfish story that I think of for my interns. I share this when they leave me. The starfish is the boy walking along the beach. There's a million starfish. And he's throwing here, one. And a man says, what are you doing? I'm helping the starfish. Well, you can't help all of those starfish. I helped that one. I made a difference to that one. No, you can't. So as a teacher, as a therapist, you can't save all of them. So we want everybody fully cured. We can help them, you know, but we cannot necessarily cure everything about every child that we come in contact with, but we are helping, you know, and it doesn't mean you don't continue collecting your starfish. You know, you have to still be looking for those kids who need something and putting your energy into it. And you can't, you know, you can't go just quit because it's everybody isn't fixed in a week and a half, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that Starfish short.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Nancy, I really appreciate your time today. And thanks again for coming on. And if you're a listener, don't forget to leave a review. And until next time, remember, you are not in this journey alone. Thank you again, Nancy.
Thank you. And I'm on Ask Nancy on Facebook.
Perfect.
So I'll put some of my things up there. I don't have a website at this point, but Ask Nancy.